The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yitzchak Grossman, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. For Hetrei Iska, loans and collections, please call the center at 1-888-485-VAAD or visit thehalachacenter.org.
Shabbos, Daf Kaf Lamed Amud Aleph, the first daf of Perek Rabbi Elazar Demila. The Gemara brings the tale of Elisha Baal Knafayim, Elisha of the Wings. Amar Rabbi Yanai, Tefillin Trichin Gufnaki. Tefillin can only be worn when the body is clean. Kelisha Baal Knafayim, as was the body of Elisha Baal Knafayim, Elisha of the Wings. Maihi, what does Gufnaki entail? Amar Abaye Shle Afiach Bahem, the person should not emit flatulence. Rava Amar Shle Yishin Bahem, the person should not sleep while wearing Tefillin. Amai Karile Elisha Baal Knafayim, why was he called this? Once the evil kingdom, presumably Rome, passed an edict, anyone who placed tefillin on his head, yikru or yidakru et mocho, his skull should be punctured. He would be brutally killed. By Elisha maniach tefillin yachru l'shuk, Elisha put on his tefillin and went outside, in defiance, apparently, of the decree. Ra'u kaster echad, an official of the government saw him, rot milafanov rot acharov. This presumably means Elisha fled from the caster and the caster pursued him, although we will see a novel interpretation that it means the caster actually fled from Elisha. Most people understand, though, the former interpretation, Elisha ran from the caster. Kiman shigia etzlo, when the caster caught him, notlon merosho, Elisha removed his tefillin from his head, v'achson biyado, he held them in his hand. Amarle Mabia Decha, the caster asked Elisha, what are you holding there? What are you hiding there? Amarle Kanfeyan, wings of doves. Pashat et yado, he opened his hand. Nimtuba Kanfeyan, apparently a miracle. Instead of the tefillin, the caster only saw Kanfeyan. Lefikachai Karinot Baal Knafayim. Because of this tale, because of this great miracle, Elisha was called Elisha of the Wings. Maishna Kanfeyan. Amarle, why did Elisha say dove's wings, lo amarle shar ofos, the wings of other birds? Mishum didamia knes Yisrael liyona. The community of Israel is compared to a dove, shenemar, pasuk in Tehillim, perek samaches, kanfe yona nechpa bakesef, vevroseh b'yirak rakharetz. So you see that the Jews are compared to a yona. Why? How? Ma yona zu knafeh maginas aleh, just like a dove, the wings protected, Af Yisrael, mitzvahs neginas alein, so too, the Jewish people, the mitzvahs, the commandments, protect them. The Gemara is actually not very clear about where in the story do we see anything about Elisha having a guf naki. There doesn't seem to be anything about purity of the guf. The Tosfos says, somewhat apparently weak interpretation, Tosfos says, l'hachi nakan Elisha demistama kimen shenasel oneis betfilin, since Elisha merited this great miracle, presumably, Hayazahar Bahan, he was careful about maintaining their holiness, Vayala Gufnaki, and he probably had a Gufnaki. Seems odd, though, the Gemara doesn't mention anything about this. Later we will see that Chasam Sofer has a different interpretation, that Elisha wanted to lie, and he removed his tefillin in order to lie. That was because he was concerned that lying also, telling the truth, is also something that goes into Gufnaki. We'll return to that approach later. Now, this part of the story actually appears earlier in the Masechta 2, in Perek Metomnin and Daf Mem Tes. But our Gemara adds a preface which is not found there. Before telling the story of Elisha Baal Knafayim, the Gemara brings a braisa. Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Kol mitzvah shemashri Yisrael atman aleihem, any mitzvah for which the Jews gave over their lives, l'misa, they're willing to be killed, b'shas deret ha-malchus, during the persecutions of the government, k'navodes chachavim, idol worship, umila, circumcision, adayin hi mochzeket b'yadam, they still have a strong grasp on the mitzvah. But b'chol mitzvah shalom must Yisrael asmer alei l'misa, any mitzvah which the Jews were not willing to give up their lives for, b'shask deres ha-malchus, yon tefillin, tefillin is a mitzvah that Jews were generally not moser nefesh for, adayin hi marufa b'yadam, they don't have such a good grasp on the mitzvah. The mitzvah is weak or loose in their hands. Then the Gemara brings the story of Elisha Baal Knafayim. So the obvious question is, what exactly is the story about? Is Elisha meant to be an example of a Jew who was not moser nefesh? Or is Elisha meant to be some kind of counterexample, some kind of exception to the rule, an example of someone who was moser nefesh? So this is basically a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi, on our daf and daf kuf lamed, says Elisha was moser nefesh. Rashi says, Shamina minad lo masru ela Elisha levado. The point of the story is that Jews in general were not Moshe Nefesh, with the exception of Elisha. Tosfos disagrees. Amrle Kanfeyan Hare Shalom Maser Atman Lomar Tfilinhein. The fact that he lied to the government official and didn't want to admit that he had tefillin, that was a lack of Mesiris Nefesh. Tosfos does not discuss the question of why, if he was too timid to be Moshe Nefesh, why did he actually go out into the street with tefillin? That's the point we'll return to later. But Rashi says, anyway, that Elisha was Moshe Nefesh. Tosfos says he was not. Now, in order to understand the rest of our discussion, the further delving into this point, we need to analyze the story. We see that Elisha, there were three decision points, three choices that he had to make. The first question was, should I go outside with tefillin or not? And he did, and that seems to be Mesiris Nefesh. The second question was, when the castor caught him, he removed his tefillin. He could have left them on. That seems to be an absence of Mesiris Nefesh. The third point was, when the castor asked him, what do you have there? He could have proudly said, I have tefillin. Instead, he lied, and he said he has wings of birds. That also seems to be a lack of Mesiris Nefesh. That's what seems to be, what Tosfos seems to be focusing on when he says Elisha was not Moshe Nefesh. So in all the various explanations, all the various opinions of the Mefarshim that we're going to discuss, we have to understand whether Elisha was Moshe Nefesh or not, why does his conduct seem to have changed between the initial decision to wear the tefillin outside and a subsequent decision to fulfill the maxim of discretion being the better part of valor and removing the tefillin and lying to the castor about them. So there actually is another Tosfos on the topic. Tosfos back on the Met Tovnun on Daf Mem Test. Tosfos is quoting the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara famously says that the rule is, Gemara Nafayin Dalad says the rule is that most of Eretz in the Torah, the halacha is Yaver Val Yaharig. If a person is forced to Mechal Shabbos by non-Jews, by our enemies, he should be Mechal Shabbos and not let himself be killed. The exception of the three cardinal sins of Adazar, Gilirais, and Shvichas Damim, idol worship, various forms of illicit immoral behavior, and murder. Gemara says, though, there are two exceptions, there are two circumstances, two sets of circumstances, where even for a mitzvah kala, even for a mitzvah which is not one of the three cardinal sins, and even for a very minor mitzvah, the Gemara says, a person must be Moshe Nefesh anyway. One of the Gemara, first the Gemara says, Lo Shonu El Shelo B'Shas Geras Malchus, when it's not during a time of government persecution, even a minor mitzvah, a person must give up his life. Similarly, the Gemara says, a person is supposed to be over in private. Again, mitzvah kala yaharig val yaver. What is a mitzvah kala? My mitzvah kala? Amar Rav Barav Yitzchak. Amar Rav, afilu shnei arachtes mitzvah. Even to change shoelaces from the Jewish mode of dress to the non-Jewish mode of dress, is something that if it's either B'Shasya or Malchus, or B'Farhesya, a person must give up his life. So Tosfos asks, when Elisha removed his tefillin, how could he do that? There was Gzeiras HaMalchus in force, and removing tefillin should be like changing shoelaces. So how could Elisha take off his tefillin? So Tosfos says, no, removing tefillin is not as bad as changing shoelaces. Why not? B'Shinui Arakta, a person who changes his shoelaces to adopt the Gentile mode of dress, he's conducting himself as an idolater. He's giving the impression that he is excluding himself from the community of Israel. Elisha, who removed his tefillin, he's not really doing anything wrong. For one moment, for one hour, he doesn't have tefillin. Many Jews are not wearing tefillin, at least not all day. So that's not as distinctive, that's not as strong a symbolic expression as changing shoelaces. So the Sfarim, the Meir Dachya, and Anaf Yoshua both point out that according to Tosfos here, Elisha was doing nothing wrong by removing his tefillin when the castor caught him. And therefore, they say that would support Rashi's pshat later, not Tosfos' own pshat in Daf Kuf Lama, that would support Rashi's pshat, that Elisha was a person who was willing to be Moshe Nefesh, and that's why he originally wore the tefillin outside. He took them off, that was just for a moment, and that was because many Jews don't wear tefillin, but Elisha was someone, like Rashi says, who was willing to be Moshe Nefesh, not like Tosfos himself says later, that Elisha was someone who was not willing to be Moshe Nefesh. This question of how Elisha was allowed to take off his tefillin, what happened to the rule that even Arachtad Masana, a person is prohibited from altering under the pressure of Zeres Malchus, is also raised by the Ran and Muki Yosef. They take a different approach. The Ran asks Elisha, how could he take off his tefillin? So the Ran gives two terutim. First, he says, the only time a person is obligated to give up his life rather than violate an Aveira is only for a mitzvah lo saseh, which a person is over actively by doing something wrong, by eating pig, let's say, by doing Chil Shabbos, by doing a malach on Shabbos, Aval levat al mitzvah aseh, kiven she'en over biyadayim mutter. To violate a mitzvah aseh, which one does passively by simply failing to perform the mitzvah aseh, by not wearing tefillin, that's something that he would not have to give up his life for. V'od, a second chiluk the Ran says, a second distinction between this Gemara and Rakhtad and Masana, she'en yichol levat al menol karcho. They anyway could have stopped him from wearing tefillin. They could have thrown him in jail and taken away his tefillin and compelled him against his will not to wear tefillin. Since anyway they could do it, he doesn't have to stick his tefillin on for as long as possible, since anyway they can rip off the tefillin and prevent him from fulfilling the mitzvah of tefillin. Ruki Yosef says something very similar. Ruki Yosef discusses the idea of Esther Karka Olam, that when Esther was with Achashverosh, it wasn't so bad because as a woman, she was a passive participant in their congress. And he says that was why it was not Erva, and that's why a person in general does not have to give up his life rather than do an Avera, even if it's for Hesia, even B'Shas HaShmad, because it's Karka Olam. And he seems to combine both points of the Ran into one. He says, Afilu Timtar Atma, even had Esther resisted and attempted to give up her life, still Yechufu Asal Advar Avera, they could have Achashverosh, and his people could have forced her to do the Avera. And that's permitted even for the three cardinal sins. V'huadin l'chal davar, he says, should be a day in l'haver b'alkarchenu, anything that they could force us to do, she'en l'an l'imtzerat meinu l'mitza b'she'e v'altase g'yon Esther. He seems to combine the idea of she'e v'altase with their ability to force us to do it. And he says, even b'shat ha'shmad, the same thing is true, and that's what happened for Elisha. That's why Elisha could take off his tefillin, because anyway, they could have forced him to remove his tefillin. The Kesem Mishnah rejects this distinction of the Ran and Ruki Yosef, that for a mitzvah aseh, for something they could force us to do anyway, a person does not have to give up his life. First, he begins by bringing three counter-arguments, three proofs to his mind that a person is obligated to give up his life even for a mitzvah aseh, even for something that he could have simply neglected to do and remained passive. First, he says, Rechnani ben Tradion was Maser Nafsho Kilas B'Torah. He learned Torah even though it was against the law and was killed for it. Of Yudah ben Bava, he says, Kilis Mosekainim. Yudah ben Bava, the Romans had prohibited smicha. He gave up his life in order to perpetuate the institution of smicha. Third, he brings a medrash. The medrash says, Malach HaYotzei LiSakel, a Jew was going to be killed, was going to be stoned. They asked him, what did you do to deserve this? Why are you being punished? He said, Al Shnatalti Lulav. I fulfilled the mitzvah of Lulav. I took Lulav. Malach HaYotzei LiTalev. They asked somebody, why are you going to be hanged or crucified? Al Shemalti Etbeni. I performed a bris milah, a circumcision on my son. So you see, the Kesem Mishnah says that even though these were mitzvah saseh, which they could have remained passive and not done, still, they were moser nefesh, and they were executed for it. Kesem Mishnah says, don't tell me this was simply a midas chasidus, that they didn't have to do it, they did it anyway. It says, mashma al pi adin hayozim kein. The implication of the Gemara's are, the Midrashim are, that they were obligated to do this from the din. I don't know why I think it's mashma, but that's what he says. Later in the lecture, we shall see Ruki Yosef actually asks this question and does say this is Midas Chasidus, but the Kesem Mishnah doesn't like this chat. So the Kesem Mishnah therefore concludes, based on these three cases, that a person is obligated to give up his life even to fulfill a mitzvah aseh, and even though he can remain passive and not do it. So what about the Kasha that Rishonim asked? What about Elisha? Why did Elisha take off his tefillin? Why did Elisha not wear tefillin once the government official caught him? If a person is obligated to mosher nefesh for anything, even for mitzvah aseh. So first of all, he says, kvar kiyam b'osei yom mitzvah tefillin. He wasn't not wearing tefillin at all. He had worn tefillin that day earlier. He was taking them off just for now. Similar to what Tosafot says. So that's okay. Also, he says, lo amar l'kaster shemekayim gzeirasam. He didn't tell the kaster, I yield to you, I defer to you, I'm not going to wear tefillin. The kaster asked him, what do you have? And he said, what I have is kanfayona, bird's wings. But he didn't say, I concede, I'm not going to wear tefillin. So the truth is, neither of these two points of the Kesem Mishnah is fully understandable. The first point, that it was only for a moment, doesn't really answer the question. The Kasha, the Rishonim, the Ran, and Tosfos was, from Arachta the Masana, a person, even his shoelaces, he's not allowed to change if it's Gzeiras HaMalchus. Shoelaces are certainly not a mitzvah aseh d'oraisa. It's just a custom of Jews. So who cares that a person is already mekayim the mitzvah of tefillin once in the morning, but if the custom of Jews is to wear tefillin all day, as it may have been in the time of Chazal, then that still shows that you're not being Jewish. What's the difference if you're already yotzei the mitzvah or not? It still shouldn't be worse than arachta de masana. Tzitzis himself added to this idea that he already wore tefillin, it was Sha'achat, that many Jews don't wear tefillin. Because the mission doesn't mention that. If that's the main point, he should have said that. The fact that he wore tefillin in the morning doesn't really explain why it was not as bad as Arachta Demasana. The second point to the Kesem Mishnah, that he didn't actually tell the caster, I'm not wearing tefillin, he simply said, Kanfayana. Again, we pointed out earlier, there were three parts to the story. There was the initial decision to wear the tefillin, the subsequent decision to remove them, and the third decision to lie about them. So even if the lying wasn't an explicit concession that he wasn't going to wear them, but he actually took the tefillin off his head, why is that itself not a failure of Mesiras Nefesh? That he doesn't explain. He just said he didn't directly repudiate the mitzvah of tefillin, but he took them off. He doesn't really address that, why that itself was not a prohibited failure of Mesiras Nefesh. So up till now, we've discussed various Mefarshim, all of whom assume that the removal of the tefillin and or the telling the caster that he didn't have tefillin was a failure of Mesiras Nefesh, that he did that in order not to get killed by the government, not to get in trouble from the government. The truth is, there are a number of Acharonim who argue, unlike the Rishonim, this was not actually a failure of Mesiras Nefesh at all. Birchas David concedes that he did remove his tefillin to avoid getting in trouble, but he says that the only time a person is obligated to Mesiras Nefesh is if they tell him, do this Aveira, or don't do this mitzvah, and he listens to them. That's a failure of Mesiras Nefesh, and that a person is not allowed to do if it's a Malchus or a Fereski, he says. But if they haven't actually seen him yet, he says, the caster hadn't actually seen Elisha wearing tefillin, he says. Because if the caster had already seen him, what good would it have done him later to remove them, to lie about them? The caster already saw, black and white, he was wearing tefillin. Must be, the Berachas David says, that the caster never actually saw him with the tefillin. So the fact that he preemptively removed his tefillin to avoid getting in trouble, to avoid getting punished by the caster, that itself does not constitute a prohibited lack of Mesiras Nefesh. That is a very big chiddush, that if there's a government decree and I deliberately do the aveira or fail to do the mitzvah in order not to get in trouble, as long as it's not in response to a direct command from them, as long as it's a preemptive decision, they don't actually see me doing it, that's not, that doesn't fall under the category of the Gemara of Yavar Val Yaharig, of Yaharig Val Yavar. That seems to be a big chiddush, but that's what he says. Several other Acharonim go even further, and they argue that Elisha's decision to remove the tefillin had nothing whatsoever with the desire to avoid getting in trouble. Chamsever has an extremely innovative idea. He says the reason Elisha took off his tefillin was not because he didn't want to get in trouble. The reason Elisha took off his tefillin is because he planned to lie to the caster and say that he did not have tefillin. And part of Gufnaki, the Chamsever says, is telling the truth, is speaking honestly. He says the Gufnaki itself required him to take off his tefillin. He didn't do that for the Roman. He did that for his own sake, not to defile the tefillin by telling lies while wearing tefillin. This is what we mentioned earlier, the Chamsever says, and this is where the Gemara saw the idea of Gufnaki and Elisha. Elisha took off his tefillin, even though while he was wearing the tefillin he had extra protection, because mitzvahs are matil in the da'atzik bay while they're performed. By taking off his tefillin, he was ceasing to perform the mitzvah, and he would have had less siyata d'shmaya, less divine protection. Nevertheless, out of respect for the Kedusha of the tefillin and for the requirement of Gufnaki, he took off his tefillin to avoid lying while wearing tefillin. Chamsever is somewhat hard to understand. It seems actually rather circular. While he was wearing tefillin, there was no chance of lying. Either the mitzvah would have protected him or it wouldn't, but lying wouldn't have entered the picture. The caster would have seen the tefillin. Lying only became an issue after he took off the tefillin, was trying to hide them in his hand, then he had to lie. But what does it mean to say that he took off his tefillin to avoid lying with tefillin? As long as he was wearing the tefillin, he wouldn't have had to lie in the first place. So, I don't know. Perhaps the Chacham Sofer understood that he could have kept the tefillin on his head but hidden them, maybe pulled his talus or a hat over them, and the caster wouldn't have seen the tefillin. But he might have asked, are you wearing tefillin? And he would have had to say no, and then he would have lied with tefillin. Anyway, that's the Chacham Sofer's understanding, that he took off his tefillin not to avoid getting caught, but simply because since he planned on lying, he doesn't discuss the question of whether lying itself was a failure of Mesiras Nefesh, but since he was going to lie, he wouldn't wear his tefillin because he would not lie while wearing tefillin. Sfas Emes has a similar idea. Sfas Emes brings a Gemara on Daf Kochav Zayin. It says Rabbi Yeshua, who was going to meet a Matronisa, he removed his tefillin before entering her presence, before entering the presence of this non-Jewish noblewoman. Why? Because Lo Yikantu Divrei Kedusha. It's inappropriate to bring Divrei Kedusha, to bring the Holy Tefillin into the presence of a non-Jewish noblewoman. He says, so too, Elisha had no problem wearing tefillin. He wasn't scared of the consequence. Since he knew that he was about to be in the presence of the caster, the non-Jewish caster, he he took off his tefillin because it wasn't appropriate to wear tefillin while in contact with the kasher. And he explicitly says, if it was Emiyushov, the kasher of the Rishonim. The kasher of the Rishonim was, how could he take them off? What happened to Harakta the Masana? According to the Vatemis, it had nothing to do with the desire to save himself. It's simply out of respect for the tefillin themselves that he had to remove them. And a truly innovative approach to this Gemara is taken by the Sefer Zichron Chaim. Zichron Chaim, as we alluded earlier, says that it was not Elisha who fled from the kasher, it was the kasher who fled from Elisha. Why would he do that? He brings the famous Chazal, the pasuk says, "Ve'u kalamei ha'aretz, the nations of the world shall see, kishem Hashem nikra alecha, the name of God is called upon you, the yarum mimecha, they shall be afraid of you." The Gemara says, "Elu tefillin shebarosh," that when the non-Jews, when our enemies see a person, a Jew, in a proper state of mind, rosh imach naki b'tar, v'guf naki, a pure and clean head and brain and a clean body, then they have a tremendous fear, a terrible fear of us, and they leave us alone. So he says that when Elisha went out to the shuk with tefillin, he knew that it was dangerous, but he had great bitachon that nothing would happen, the mitzvah would protect him. And indeed, when the kasher saw him, the kasher had this terrible dread of him, and the kasher fled from him. Elisha pursued the kasher. He does not really explain why on earth Elisha would do such a thing. Maybe he wanted to make a Kiddush Hashem and explain to him what was going on. When Elisha finally caught the kasher, he took off his tefillin in order that the kasher would be able to stand in his presence. Then he explained to the kasher, "You want to know what's going on here? You want to know why a minute ago you could not tolerate being in my presence, and now you can? It's because of these tefillin that I was wearing before, and now I'm not wearing." And when Elisha said Kanfayana, he didn't mean literally I'm holding bird's wings. He meant, these tefillin, you're wondering how they have this magic power, this mystical power to scare you away. It's because tefillin is a mitzvah, and mitzvahs are like Kanfayana, that they protect the Jews. And the tefillin, when I wear them, when I fulfill the mitzvah, they protect me. And you are scared, you are scared, you are filled with dread, you cannot approach me. And he says that there was a similar incident that occurred during the First Napoleonic War when Napoleon was battling Tsar Alexander I. He says there was a Russian officer who was quartered in a house, and in an adjacent room in the house, the Gaon, the Chassid, Rabbi Avram, the brother of the Gaon, the Chassid, the Vilna Gaon, was in the next room. Rabbi Avram, the Chassid Rabbi Avram, was learning all night, and in the morning he began davening Shacharis with his talis and tefillin. The Russian officer, when he awoke, was disturbed by the incessant talking, muttering of Rabbi Avram. So he asked one of his two attendants, he had a couple of attendants, servants, aides with him, he asked one of them to please go into the next room and tell the rabbi to be quiet since he has no peace, he can't rest with his incessant muttering. So earlier, the landlord, the Jewish Balabais, had instructed the two aides of the officer, please leave the holy man alone, he's a great man, a holy man, please do not disturb him. So when the aide received this order from his officer, he told him, maybe I shouldn't do this, we were instructed to leave the holy man alone. So the officer is a reasonable guy, he said, okay, so be respectful, you know, just be politely asking to please be quiet. Fine. So the first aide walks into the room to fulfill his orders. As soon as he steps in and he sees Rabbi Avram wearing his talis and tefillin, nafal pachad umora v'ra'ada alav, fear and terror and trembling, he couldn't open his mouth, all his limbs shuddered, until with great effort he forced himself out of the room and he fled and he returned to his master and said, sorry, I couldn't do what you wanted me to do. So the officer, who was a modern fellow, said, oh, we see how great the faculty of imagination is, the power of suggestion. Since you knew, he says, that he was a great man, when you entered his presence, you became terrified. But you're a fool and an idiot. Pesi v'shota. So he told the second aide, you go. You go in and don't worry about him. He's just a human being, just like me. You go in and ask him to please be quiet and please stop disturbing me. So sure enough, the second aide entered the room and exactly the same thing happened. He was frozen to the spot. He couldn't take a step anywhere. He couldn't open his mouth. All his limbs trembled, just as happened to the first one. And again, with great effort, he finally extracted himself from the room. He fled. He returned to his master, the officer. The officer became really angry, and he says, "Tipshim hem misharsai, all my aides are idiots. They're totally susceptible to the power of suggestion. I'll go myself." And you can all see where this is going. He himself went in. Exact same thing happened. He was he couldn't do anything either. He left. So he asked the landlord, please ask the rabbi, what is going on here? What is this great power he has to freeze all of us? I would never have believed this had I not seen it with my own eyes. How can he do this to us? So Rav Ram says, it's not a special magic trick. It's just the school of tefillin. as the pasuk says, ro kol me'aretz, that when tefillin are worn on the head of someone with a clean and pure brain, a clean and pure mach, fear and terror are befall any of our enemies, any of the non-Jews who try to approach us. So up till now we've been discussing the question of whether Elisha was obligated, according to the din, to give up his life, either by wearing tefillin initially or by not taking off the tefillin. Another issue which is involved in the tale of Elisha is the question, the major discussion among the Rishonim, whether a person in a circumstance in which he is not obligated to give up his life, if he wishes to do so, is that Osir? Is that Mutter? Is it a Midas Chassidus? Is a person allowed to give up his life where the Halacha does not require it? So this is a major machlokas among the Rishonim. The Rambam says emphatically twice that he is not allowed to. Yisod Yatara, Perikei. First he says in Meislo Avar, if a person in normal circumstances gives up his life rather than dying, rather than violating the mitzvah, the Avera, Reizim Mitzchayev Benafsho. He's done a wrong thing and he's considered responsible for his own death. Kol Misha Namarbo Yavar Val Yaharig, any case where the halacha is that he should rather violate the Avera and not let himself be killed, Venerag Lo Avar, if instead he chooses to allow himself to be killed and not violate the Avera, Reizim Mitzchayev Benafsho. He's committed a capital offense, terrible thing. Muki Yosef accepts the basic position of the Rambam that a person normally is prohibited from giving up his life where the halacha does not require it, but there's one exception, he says, a person who is an Adam Gadol V'chassid, a great man, a pious man, Yare Shemayim, a person who has fear of heaven, V'roesh Adar Paras Bekach, he sees that the generation is lax in a certain area, Rashoy L'Kaddish Hashem, he is permitted to make a Kiddush Hashem and to give up his life even for Mitzvah Kala, in order to make a mass Kiddush Hashem, to teach the generation a lesson, Kishiru Ha'am, the nation should see, V'yilamdu L'yiras Hashem La'ava B'chal Liba. To increase Yiras Hashem and Avas Hashem, it is permitted for him to voluntarily give up his life in this particular circumstance. He brings a proof, he says, Imaram Psachim says, that Hanani, Mishael, V'Azariah threw themselves allowed themselves to be thrown into the Kibshon Ha'esh, the flaming furnace, not to bow down to the idol, the Tzelem. Even though he says that Tzelem was not really Avodah Zarah, not really idol worship, it was simply Andarti Shel Malachim, was some kind of figure, symbolic of the kings, covered Baalma, simply respect for the monarch. So really, they were not obligated to be Moser Nefesh. Ela Mitosha Yeruban Toan Mithurim Shais Avodah Zarah, since most people did believe this was idol worship, Kiddush Hashem, Mashato. They wanted to make a point, make a Kiddush Hashem, and teach people not to be Avodah Zarah, so they voluntarily gave up their lives. Similarly, he brings the Medrash that Beis Yosef brought before, Malach Hayotzi Lisakel, why are you being stoned? Shemalti es Bani, I perform circumcision. Malach Hayotzi Litalev, why are you being hanged or crucified? Shenatalti es Lulav, I fulfill the mitzvah of Lulav. So why do they do that? He holds, like the Ram before we mentioned, that a mitzvah say a person does not have to give up his life if he wants to simply passively not do the mitzvah. The same thing he says with the Midas Chassidus, since it was a Shasik Zera, the circumstances required it. So in these particular cases, they were allowed to give up their lives in order to teach the generation a lesson in fear and love of God. We mentioned before, the Kesef Mishnah says that it doesn't seem to him that these stories were Midas Chassidus, but Mukesh says he thinks it was Midas Chassidus. It was this special case where special people are allowed to give up their lives under special circumstances to make a great Kiddush Hashem and teach people lessons in Avat Hashem and Yeras Hashem. In Tosus, we have something of a contradiction about whether a person is allowed to give up his life, where he doesn't have to. One Tosus, in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chazayin, explicitly says that a person is allowed to. But in another Tosfos in Sanhedrin, he seems to indicate that a person is not allowed to. He brings the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara says that a non-Jew told a Jew, "Katilas pasta, cut this produce for me. V'lo, if you don't do this, katilna l'cha, I will kill you. K'dekatilna l'planya, as I killed so-and-so, Bar Yisrael, a Jewish person, d'amrile, bashalik dera b'shabata, I asked him on Shabbos to cook a certain dish for me, below Bashil v'katilte. He didn't listen and I killed him." So that other Jew apparently gave up his life rather than violate Shabbos under pressure from a non-Jew. So Tosa says, Shem Aloha Yabaki Bahalacha. Perhaps that person was not an expert in Halacha, because Minadin Lohay Olam Saratum Makamanat Ashmashalakum. Because according to Halacha, since there was not one of the three cardinal sins, he would not have had to give up his life. So why does Tosa say the person was not an expert in Halacha? Maybe that person voluntarily, out of love of God, chose to give up his life. So the Trumas Eshen and others infer from this Tosa that a person who does not have to give up his life is not allowed to give up his life, and a person who does must be considered lo hayabaki b'halacha. But that is, of course, a contradiction to the other Tosas who says explicitly that afilu b'shar mitzvos rashoi. So the Achronim have proposed various resolutions for the contradiction between these two sets of remarks of Tosas. The Knesset Gdola suggests that it depends whether the non-Jew is mechavin lahaviru al daso, is deliberately intending to force the Jew to violate his religion, or is simply out for himself, simply needs something done. In a case where it's a deliberate religious persecution, then a person is allowed to give up his life, even if it doesn't rise to the level of a full Gzeiras HaMalchus, a full government persecution. It's just one individual non-Jew's attempt to force the Jew to violate his religion. But if it's just L'hanas Asmer, if it's just because he needs something done, and he doesn't care that the Jew has to violate his religion, then the Jew should not give up his life. The Ma'amar Mardechai has another two proposals to resolve the contradiction in Tosus. He says that Tosa says lo hayabaki b'halacha because the implication was that the person did it because he was mechuyev to, not because it was midas chasidus. Then he suggests that maybe Tosa, when he says that a person is allowed to, he meant like Melukh Yosef, only special people, only Adam Gadol in special circumstances, and the Mar Nivamas was not talking about such a case. And both his resolutions need a little work. They're not really very satisfying, because why would Tosus say Ein Abaki? Who told Tosus he wasn't an Adam Gadol? The Mar doesn't say what his name was. Who told Tosus that he was doing him in Adin, that he wasn't doing him in Adin? So why would Tosus automatically say the guy was not a Baki, when we can Malamei Tchus and say that he was a Baki, just he was an Adam Gadol, or that he was doing it as Midas Chasidus? So he doesn't really explain that, but he says that's what Tosus means. Really, a person is allowed to, or at least if he's an Adam Gadol, but the other Tosus is not a riot. The Ran also asks how could Elisha wear the tefillin outside if he did not have to. The Ran, as we saw earlier, says that Elisha was allowed to take off the tefillin because for mitzvah say a person is not obligated to mutter nefesh. The Ran then asks, why did Elisha wear them in the first place? So the Ran also says the same idea, that a person is allowed to mutter nefesh even when he does not have to. And that's what Elisha was doing, and he brings the Gemara Malachayotilitzale, same Gemara that Yosef brought as proof that a person is allowed to mutter nefesh. The Ram brings those same Gemaras, and that's why Elisha, he says, wore his tefillin initially, not because he had to, but he wanted to. He wanted to be mutter nefesh. He wanted to do the mitzvah tefillin, even in the teeth of Gzeiras Malchus, even though he was not obligated to according to Halacha. Another example he brings, Bechei Matinu B'Daniel, the biblical Daniel, Shemasar Atmal Atfila Shayad Rabbanan. Elisha famously was thrown into the pit of lions. That was because he was caught praying. That's why he was thrown in. He was miraculously saved. But the Ran says, apparently he was Moshe Nefesh. He knew what could happen. He knew that he could be killed. And nevertheless, he prayed anyway. Even though not praying would have been passively failing to do a mitzvah today, which the Ran's opinion is a person is not obligated to do. Nevertheless, he did it because he's allowed to. So the question of the Ran is, if Elisha was initially choosing to be Moshe Nefesh by putting on his tefillin, why did he take them off? Why didn't he continue to be Moshe Nefesh? So the Sefer Nafi Yeshua says that even according to the opinions that a person is allowed to be Moshe Nefesh, still, since like we saw in Tosus, he already wore tefillin earlier in the day, then continuing wearing them, even for Midas Chasidus, he wasn't interested in doing. Which doesn't completely explain the question, because still, why did he go outside with tefillin? He had already worn the tefillin earlier. If he didn't want to be Moshe Nefesh, he should have worn them in his house and not worn them outside. So the bottom line is, we still don't really have an explanation, according to the Ran, for why, if he decided to be a chassid, as the Ran says, and wear them outside, even though he didn't have to, why did he actually take them off later when the castor caught him? The simple answer would seem to be that he was willing to be a chassid and risk his life because he thought the chances were better than even, the chances might have been fairly low, that he was actually going to get caught, even though he was in public. We don't know how ubiquitous the castorim were. He might have thought that it's a risk, but I'll take the risk because I'll probably make it. But once the castor was upon him, and his death would have been a psik resha, his death would have been a certainty, at that point he didn't want to be Moshe Nefesh anymore. That may be what the Ran understood. Blacha Mishnah tries to defend the Rambam from this kasha of the Ran. The Ran asked that why did Elisha put on his tefillin if he didn't have to? So the Ran, that's one of the Ran's several rayas, that a person is allowed to mashir nefesh even when he's not obligated to. But the Rambam, as we saw earlier, most emphatically says the person is not allowed to. Mischayev ben Afshu, he says, if you do. So according to the Rambam, how on earth was Elisha allowed to risk his life by wearing tefillin in public? So the Lech Mishnah says the Rambam understood that Elisha was mechuyev to wear his tefillin. The Ran said, we said earlier, Tosus, the Ran Mukiyosif all says, since Mr. Dasei, since he already wore his tefillin once in a day, since they could have stopped him from wearing tefillin, all those various reasons why a person was not obligated to risk his life by continuing to wear tefillin in the teeth of the government edict. Lech Mishnah says the Ram disagrees with all that. The Ram says that no difference. A person is always mechuyev to risk his life. Lo Sasei, Asei, they can stop you, they can stop you. There's never an excuse for not doing a mitzvah when there is a Xeris Malchus. So then the obvious problem is that why did Elisha take them off? If the Ram doesn't hold of all the Ran and the others said that because Elisha took them off, that must be a person not obligated to Moshe Nefesh. But if the Ram disagrees with that, how could Elisha take them off? So he says, that much, the Rambam agrees, that since he had already worn the tefillin earlier, he was allowed to take them off. And the obvious problem is, as the Arpei Moshe asks, then we still have the same kasha. Why did he go out to Iowa's tefillin then? He already wore them inside. So why would he have risked his life by continuing to wear them outside? So ultimately, the same kasha we asked before on the Ram, the same kasha is present on the Lech Mishnah. If he was really obligated to wear them, he should have continued to wear them. If he didn't have to wear them because he already wore them once, he shouldn't have taken them outside in the first place. So how do we understand in the Rambam why did he risk his life of wearing them outside but then take them off when the kasher caught him? What about Daniel? What about the Ran's kasher from Daniel? Daniel risked his life to pray, to daven, even though he knew what would happen, he knew what could happen. As we see, he was thrown into the den of the lions. So that, the Ran, the Lech Mishnah says, Balabastish. Elisha was davening inside his house. Bertina doesn't say anything about public. Elisha, it says, was Yatzel Ashuk. But Daniel was praying privately in his house. Hayasavrali Malik, he thought they would never catch him. Lo Yamasakin Asabakach. He never meant to risk his life. That's why he did what he did. The Arpei Moshe explains that the Lech Mishnah did not say this for Elisha. The Lech Mishnah did not answer the Rambam by saying that Elisha wore his tefillin and assumed he would never get caught, because that makes sense for someone like Daniel who was doing things privately in his house. But Elisha was Yatzel Lashuk. So the Lech Mishnah did not say that he didn't expect to get caught. He had to have a reasonable expectation of getting caught. Therefore, he says that the Rambam says that he was Mechuyev to. But as we asked, as Arpei Moshe asked, the question is, if he knew there was a good chance of getting caught and still did it, and he was still Mechuyev to, even though he wore it in his house, then why did he take them off later? And if he took them off later, the Lech Mishnah says, because he already wore them once, then he shouldn't have worn them outside in the first place, because he already wore them once inside his house. So at the end of the day, the Lech Mishnah's pshat is still hard to understand. What was the difference between initially taking the reckless risk of wearing them in the street versus the subsequent risk of continuing to wear them in the presence of the caster? The Arpei Moshe himself suggests that the pshat of the Rambam is that he also agrees to the Rambam that it was Midas Chassidus. But the obvious problem, though, was the Rambam holds that a person is not allowed to be a chassid, a person is chayav benafsho if he tries to voluntarily give up his life for a mitzvah. The answer is that the Mukiyosif says that even the Rambam agrees. He says that an Adam Gadol v'chassid and Dar Tzarech L'kach is allowed to. So Elisha was certainly such a person. Milanu Gadol me Elisha. Elisha was a great man. He was allowed to risk his life to wear tefillin to teach his Dar a lesson about the importance of doing mitzvahs. The Yafei Naim has another understanding of Elisha. He says the same way we saw that the Lech Mishnah says that Daniel was davening in his house and never expected to get caught, and that's why he did what he did. So he says, Elisha was the same thing, basically. He doesn't bring the Lech Mishnah, he doesn't discuss Daniel, but he says the same thing. He says, whether you learn that Elisha was someone like Rashi, who wanted to be Moshe Nefesh, whether you learn like Tosus that Elisha was someone who didn't want to be Moshe Nefesh, either way, he says, he never intended to wear his tefillin outside, because once you wear tefillin once, you're ready Yotze, and then you don't have to wear them again in the face of an edict which is going to get you killed, he says. So either way, Elisha never intended to wear his tefillin outside. Just like the Arpei Moshe asked on the Lech Mishnah, it's the same way he took them off in the presence of the caster, because he's ready Yotze once during the day. Why did he wear them in the first place? He never intended to wear them outside. He simply forgot. Shacham, lava daite. He put them on initially in his home, and he intended that as soon as he left the house, he would take them off. Yotze l'chut for lava daite. He simply forgot. So in summary, we have several different approaches to the story of Elisha. According to Tosfos, Elisha was simply an example of one of the many people in the time of Chazal in the time of the Gzeres HaMalchus who were not much in Nefesh B'Tfilin. So then why did he actually go outside with the Tfilin, which seems like a tremendously brave act of Mesiras Nefesh? Tosis doesn't say, but we just mentioned the Feinayim, which says that he just forgot. It wasn't bravery, it was simply forgetfulness. Rashi's opinion, and apparently that of many other Mepharshim, is that Elisha was an exception to the general rule. Elisha was someone who was Moser Nefesh B'Tfilin. That's why he wore them out to the street in the first place. It wasn't forgetting, it was a brave act. So why did he take them off? Either the pshat of the Ran that a person never has to give up his life for mitzvah say, or because he already wore them once, like Tosfos says, and because many Jews don't wear tefillin, so it's not like a rakhtas masana, we still have to explain why initially he kept them on and subsequently he took them off, and the simple answer would seem to be, as we said earlier, that initially the risk was, even though there was a significant risk, it was somewhat low, it was not a psik ratio, it was not certain he would get killed. Later, when it was a question of taking them off for 1 minute to avoid certain death, at that point he took them off and it would no longer continue to be Moser Nefesh. And why he wore them out originally, assuming that was Mesiras Nefesh and not simple forgetfulness like the Feinayim, according to the Ran and Muki Yosef, if that was a Midas Chasidus, he didn't have to do it, but he chose to do it anyway for Midas Chasidus. Either anyone's allowed to do it or Razim Gadol is allowed to do it. And according to the Rambam, as understood by the Lecha Mishnah, that was Medina. That the Rambam rejects the distinctions of the other poskim and says that even for a mitzvah say, even for something that they can stop us from doing, a person is still obligated to Moser Nefesh.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halachic services or consultations, or to present a shaila, please call 1-888-485-VAD. That's 1-888-485-8223, or email info@thehalachacenter.org.